Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Abdullah Samir Show. It's a show now, I guess. we call it that. I'm joined by a special guest today, Wissam Hassan. Wissam Hassan is a co-founder of a group called Atheism Without Borders. It's based all, I guess it's all over the world, but you can tell us more about that. And we're going to get into Wissam's story about, you know, how he lost his faith, his activism work that he's doing, you know, a very interesting story of him in Iraq and, you know, how he had to hide his ex-Muslimness, his identity from fanatics and extremists and all that. Wissam, how, you're right now in the UK. How are you doing? It's a nice warm day, isn't it?
It is. It's really, you hear all the stereotypes about British weather. It's always gloom, doom and gloom. It's raining, it's fog, it's cold, it's horrible, even in July and August in the summer. Yeah. But then Corona hits, and suddenly we have sun for 2 months in a row, and the hottest spring on record.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Let's go back to the beginning. Obviously you're born in a Muslim family. Tell us a little bit about your family and a little bit about how you lost or you gained freedom. I probably shouldn't say lost, because lost sounds like something bad, but this is actually something good. So how you gained freedom from religion, and, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
So I was born in a normal Muslim family, and by normal I mean they call themselves Muslim. They say Shahada, sometimes they pray, some days of Ramadan they fast. That's the vast majority of Muslims. But for some reason, most of the family library, there's some literature, some science, and some religion. Most of the religious stuff are from Sunni books. So we had Sahih Bukhari, Muslim. We had Tafsir Tabari. But we didn't have many Shiite books. Although my parents both are originally Shiites, but never really. So that was, very middle-class, leftish upbringing. But I think it all started when I was in secondary school and the religious Islamic teaching teacher asked me if I was a Sunni or a Shiite. I didn't know what to answer. So I went back home and asked my mom, and she said, "That's the library, go read and make up your own mind." And I was just like,
That's interesting, because she wasn't grouping you. She wasn't sticking you in a box. She was saying, figure it out for yourself, which is amazing if you ask
exactly.
me.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good thing. So at the age of 11 and 12, I started reading when I can about these things. But since then, I just started saying, I'm a Shiite, because my parents are from a families that were obviously Shiites. But I kept reading all the time. And with time, you start to think, hold on. That story in Ibn Kathir, when how mice were created, that doesn't make sense. That cannot
be. Can you tell me the story? What is that? I'm not familiar with that story.
Ah, it's the Noah's Ark.
Okay.
So the lion was carrying the other animals. So Noah told God, "We have an issue here." So God cursed the lion with fever. So he was timid most of the time. So he didn't scare the other animals.
Oh, that's how he didn't eat the other animals. He got cursed with fever.
Yeah, and that was the first fever. That was the first fever in humanity on Earth.
Yeah.
And then some other animals, they had a, what was it? I can't remember. Some other animals were getting annoyed, so he created mice by making the lion sneeze. When he sneezed, a mouse came out. And then that got, and the mice started eating all the food for the other animals, and then they complained. So he created, there were mice on the ark eating the food. Uh-huh. So the lion sneezed the cat. And that's how cats created.
That's evolution in the Islamic history books. cats, lions are cats, right? So that's evolution in the Islamic books.
See, absolutely, yeah. So for a 16, 17-year-old to read this, I started questioning stuff. And then, but hold on, in the biology class, they started talking about evolution and how life was created possibly in some sandy pockets on a pool of biomatter. But what about Adam and Eve? Bear in mind, or that I'm in my 40s, so you can imagine when was that. They used to teach us in Iraq about evolution, about abiogenesis.
What? Wow, nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now everything went backwards. Anyway, so that doesn't make sense. And then I saw a science sci-fi movie about how really life was created from other life that was on Mars and it was spawned. And I thought, yeah, that was it. Yeah, so God sent Adam and Eve from Mars. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And then I went through a phase of, no, there is no, life didn't come from Mars. It was abiogenesis. And Adam and Eve is just, it's not literally Adam and Eve. He's just given an example. So that's how it went for me. But it didn't really take up a lot of space in my mind. I just lived my life. And whenever something comes up related to religion, I think, No, that can't be right. Until one time I was in the conversation, I found myself saying, no, the God in the Quran and the Bible and all that, that can't be real. There must be some force out there, but that can't be real. The God that wrote the Quran and Bible, no. So in some terms, that might be, you can call me, at the time I was a deist. I believed in a higher power, but not Allah. And then that, again, life moves on. Until literally maybe 3 years ago. Yeah, 3.5 years ago. I found myself saying to a friend, well, I'm an atheist, so I don't believe in God. So it wasn't a decision. It wasn't a major milestone in my life, something that happened and then I decided to become an atheist. No, it was gradual. Until I found myself literally just, no, I'm an atheist. And she said, wait, weren't you saying that you believed in a higher power before? And that's when I realized, oh, I'm an atheist. I lost it. It's gone.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's an amazing story. I'm also amazed at how your young mind was trying to make sense of conflicting information. On one hand, you had this religious book. On the other hand, you had this scientific knowledge that we've accumulated as a species over thousands of years. It's not stuck in the 14th century, but it's something that has gradually been improved over time to get to where we are today. And, your mind was trying to, combine the two things together, Adam and Eve plus abiogenesis or plus, this idea of a sperm, well, I forget what it's called, where life was
stuck.
Yes, transpermia. Yeah, yes, transpermia. And transpermia, and it's amazing how your mind was trying to do that, and that's what we do, and that's where doubts come from, and that's why doubts are actually a good thing, because doubts are your mind telling you things are not clicking in together, and you need to do something, you need to fix that, because you have cognitive dissonance where it's like our mind wants reality to mesh nicely. And your story kind of reminds me of my own, where slowly things started to kind of like fall apart, where I'm like, these things are not melding, right? So your approach, in my opinion, is the best approach of kind of just leaving it behind and not trying to get into complicated reinterpretation and reevaluation, which is honestly, in my opinion, intellectually dishonest. It's not looking at the book for what it is. It's basically making the book what you want it to be. So so that being said, so then what happened? So tell us about, like, what happened in Iraq? And, you want to go to that right now? Talk about that part of your story?
Okay, let's get that out of the way. So the reason why I tell this story sometimes, I don't tell it often. I might have mentioned it at passing in one of my live streams on our channel. But the point of it is those apologists, left-wing snowflakes, be it they're atheists or Christians, but they support Muslims, Muslim rights and all that. And by doing that, they actually support the right-wing side, fundamentalists as well. One of those is Facebook themselves, and sometimes YouTube. But also, because in our group, we have 25,000 members in the main group. So many Muslims come in and say, why do you keep going on and on about Islam? Live your life. Okay, you left Islam, lakum dinakum waliya din. Just live your life, stop complaining about Islam, and yeah, leave the, just
leave
live the normal.
Leave us alone, basically, right?
Yeah, they went inside our group, which is called Ilhad Ilahi, Atheism Without Borders, and they said, stop talking about us. Yeah, when you stop apostasy laws, when you stop Hadd al-Riddah, and that's when they say, oh, no, there is no such thing. There's no such thing as Hadd al-Riddah in Islam.
They're saying there's no such thing as killing apostates for leaving the religion, right?
No, there's no such thing. No, it doesn't exist. Because there are so many rules, and one of the rules, you need to have an Islamic State, and we don't have an Islamic State.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're just waiting for the Islamic State, and then you'll be heading.
Yeah. Or you can ask them, well, do you condemn it without the Islamic State? Like, do you agree that this is a bad thing? Or are you saying it's okay? Like, make up your mind, basically. Like, it's not there or it's there, right? You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Once you push them into that corner, they will say, well, yeah, every other country in the world, they execute for treason.
Yeah.
If you're a traitor to your country, no. Yeah. If I'm British and I leave Britain, I'm not a traitor to Britain. If I criticize the Prime Minister, which I do a lot, that doesn't make me a traitor.
Yeah.
If I say F the Queen, my Queen, your Queen,
my Queen,
nobody's going to do anything to me.
Yeah, and treason, like actual treason, is different. Actual treason involves putting people's lives at risk, putting state assets, for example. It could be spies, it could be undercover agents, it could be even like army people. Like if a country has allocated, you know, a certain base or something, and someone goes and exposes the location of the base and puts those lives at risk, that is treason. And I understand why you would be guilty of, or possibly punished with death for that, because you actually, you harmed other people. Like, you actually have done something to put other people's lives at risk. Apostasy is a personal decision.
Like not from the point of view of someone like, he's famous, called Haytham Talat. He has a channel with hundreds of thousands of subscribers and followers, and they basically worship his ass. He went on a video with a straight face, said, atheists are more dangerous than terrorists.
Oh.
Because the worst thing a terrorist can do to you is take your life.
Yeah.
An atheist will take your afterlife.
Yeah.
If I convince that theist, be it Muslim, Christian, that, what you're going through is BS, that's not real, and because of my argument, they will lose their faith.
Yeah.
I cost them their afterlife, which makes me more dangerous than a terrorist, which means I'm basically a traitor. So open for all, go do your thing. Yeah, so that's how some Muslims think about atheists. But at the same time, that's how they exactly think about other Muslims from different sects. So, because in Iraq, by the way, in Iraq, do you know how many religions in Iraq? We have Muslims, Christians, we have Mandaeans, we have Yazidis, we have Jews. So these are religions, not sects, pure religions. Within Christians, there were three different sects, the Christians only.
Mm-hmm.
Muslims, we have Sunnis and Shiites. We have the Shiites, we have the Ithna Ashari, we have those who follow Khamenei from Iran. And you know, do you know what's the system within Shiite sect?
No.
So when you are old enough, you have to decide who is your merja. And merja is some scholar who studied religion. So whatever decision you have in your life, you have to check with them first.
Mm.
If you don't know if this is halal or haram, check with that person.
It's so, like a personal imam, kind of?
Yeah, he's not that personal because he like has maybe millions of followers.
Oh, but not personal. Okay, but it's just someone you follow and attach yourself to.
Exactly. Okay. So, yeah, so we have Shiites that follow Khamenei, we have Shiites that follow Sistani, and those who follow Sadr. Hakim, definitely. And there's a new guy called Sarkhi. I don't know where he came from. So there's like five I can count. So each one of them consider the others are kafir. And amongst all that, then there will be some sectarian wars. And that's what happened just after the invasion. Well, a year after the invasion.
Hmm.
They wanted to fight the Americans. They couldn't. So they started fighting each other. Especially politics got involved. So we have militias. I just read a comment about Haytham. someone recognized. Yeah, he has a cult following.
So anyway, so in Iraq, basically, you have a lot of different religions, and you had relative. Did you have relative peace in the past, and then it became all destabilized because of America? Is it America? Is that what you're saying?
So when Westerners find out I'm from Iraq, they ask me, is it better or worse than before? That's the typical question. And the typical answer I give is, Saddam was the devil himself.
Mm-hmm.
He was the devil incarnate. But he stood on a cover of a manhole. So his presence kept the manhole cover in place.
Okay.
On the 9th of April, when that statue of Saddam Hussein got toppled over, the manhole cover was open. Okay. And a million demons came out.
Okay.
So he ruled with an iron fist. Some would say, oh, it was peaceful from the outside. Yes. But living under his regime, everybody knew there is a very good chance when you go to work, you don't come back.
Wow.
That's an ongoing thing in the 80s and 90s. Because if you said something to someone that didn't sound right in terms of maybe you're hinting to criticizing the governing body, the governing party, not Saddam directly, just the party, his party, there's a very good chance you don't come back. You just disappear.
Yeah.
So that was the life in Saddam. So nobody could breathe. And then, now we can talk freely-ish, but you have 65 new Saddams you can't criticize because they have their own militias and they all have their power from their religious status. Not a single militia in Iraq doesn't follow someone that has a religious cover.
Oh, yeah?
And the worst of them, a guy called Sadr, Muqtada al-Sadr, he claims that a million people form his army, called the Mahdi Army. He changed them, changed the name, rebranded everything, but they're still one of the worst militias, but there are plenty of them.
Why is that? Why are they all connected to religion? What is the reason for that?
How would you make people follow you?
So the religious meme is a good way, especially with Islamic ideology, to get people to fight for you because of the doctrine of jihad and martyrdom and all that?
Exactly. Okay. And not only that, within the Shiites, being a devout follower to someone, that's part of the whole ideology of Shiites.
Yeah.
So Muhammad is sacred-ish, maybe, but Ali, oh no, it's much worse with that. Ali is really sacred. And then you go down to Hassan and Hussein, oh gee, it gets multiplied. And then you go down to all the imams, there are 12 of them. So they are used to following figureheads, and then once one of them will come, well, not one of the sacred ones, a new guy shows up, and he's a marja. So he tells them right from wrong, and he wear imame. It's perfect. We have someone living we can follow. He can tell us whatever he wants and we will do it. Go blow up that building. They will do it. Go kill yourself. They will go kill themselves. And that's what happens. To the point where in Iraq, if a checkpoint stopped you in the years 2005 and 2006, you don't know that checkpoint, that police or army checkpoint. Chances are it isn't. It's not official. People have official uniform that got from the government, which is all sectarian as well. Their presence on the street is to kidnap people.
Oh, wow.
And there are so many of them. If there will be a terrorist attack in an area that is populated by Shiites, well, Sunnis might have done it. So what will the Shiites militia do? They will kidnap the couple of Sunni guys, torture them for a week or so, behead them, kill them, just throw them in the river. Something else happened, a terrorist attack, an explosion happens in a Sunni area. Okay, who did it? Must be the Shiites. Then some Sunni militia will kidnap a few Shia people and do that to it. And since we had, on average in that period, and I'm not kidding, I think the number was on average 15 explosions a day in all of Iraq. So the tit-for-tat game got out of control very quickly.
Yeah.
So when we used to go to work, because I used to work for a foreign construction company at the time, we had to change cars along the way so people won't target us. So I had a crosshair on my forehead because of who I work for, and depends on who's going to stop me because of my sect. So going to work, I take a cab to a midpoint, and then I will have a chauffeur who will drive us to a third point, and then we'll take another cab and get to the what is called the green zone at the time.
Okay.
And that's where we go to work and come back again, exactly the same thing. So this one day on the way back, in the middle leg of the journey, when we were in with the chauffeur, there were three of us, checkpoint stopped us. So we have to make a judgment call looking at their faces. Are they Sunnis or Shiites? They have no indications. You don't know. It's a flip of a coin. So everybody said, two of my colleagues were with me.
So this is a life and death kind of split second decision you have to make, because you have to try to pretend to be basically the same religion as the checkpoint, because if not, they're going to kidnap you and potentially kill you or ransom you or whatever, right?
Yes, and the decision means, because I have two different IDs. So they stop the car and ask me for my name, show me your ID.
Yeah.
We had forged IDs.
Oh, yeah.
The one from the name, you can tell if that person is Shiite or Sunni. If there's a Hassan, Haider in the name, if you have Omar or Bakr in the name. So that, you can tell. So my two colleagues, to be honest, I can't even remember who were they, if they were Sunnis or Shiites. But my two colleagues picked side. I said no. I picked the other.
Wow.
So,
so what did you do?
Yeah. So checkpoint stopped us, checked their IDs, and they looked at mine and said, get out.
Oh, geez. So you decided to, what did you end up saying? You were Shia or Sunni?
I can't remember.
Okay. So, but what is it? Yeah.
It was different than my colleagues. So they said Shiite, I went Sunni.
Okay.
But I can't remember what was it. All I remember is I didn't.
You didn't pick the right one. Oh my goodness. So they pulled you out of the car, and now what happened?
Zip tied and behind my back, got into a car.
All because of your so-called religion.
Exactly.
Jeez, that's crazy.
And I even wasn't a Muslim at this time. That was the period when I thought,
oh my God, that's so bad. Like, you don't believe. What if you would have told them, I'm a mulhid, I'm atheist?
Exactly. If they said, oh, look at your name, come out. And I would say, no, hold on, ignore the name. I'm not even a Muslim.
Yeah.
Imagine what will happen then. Just because I'm a different kind of Muslim, get out of the car.
Oh my God.
So, zip tied behind my back, in the back of a car, and it's just a normal sedan. It's not an army car. It's not a police car. It's not a government car. Just a private car. So that's when I started having these flashbacks of the scenes on the news we see on daily basis when the army raided an area where they used to torture people, and they can see. I'm not going to describe what was on the national news at the time, but if you watch the movie Saw, that was on national television in Iraq in 2005 and 2006. Mm-hmm. I kid you not. Ask any Iraqi. And the movie Saw comes to mind immediately. Anyway, so I was thinking about these things in the car while they were driving.
What's the movie? I didn't catch the reference. What were you saying about Saw? The movie? Yeah, what about it?
Saw, the horror movie. Saw.
Oh, okay.
S-A-W, Saw.
Okay, yeah. Oh, you were thinking of this is what's going to happen to you. Okay, I haven't seen that movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's...
You think they're going to torture you and kill you and all that.
Exactly, okay. The torture part. And torture part, and then they will ask for ransom from my family. They get the ransom, and they kill me and throw me away.
Oh, jeez.
And that's what happens. That was the norm. So, car driving. Can't remember for how long. But busy street, car stuck in traffic. Three cars ahead of me blows up. So three cars ahead,
like a movie,
a car blows up. Okay, so in the midst of confusion, because I was in the back seat, I opened the car door.
Yeah, okay.
No, the zip tie can't open.
Oh, okay.
Can't open.
Yeah.
They only do it in movies. Real life doesn't.
Yeah.
I just opened the door and run.
Oh my God. Jeez.
So just car exploded, fire, blood everywhere. And that's my chance. I run. So I ran and ran. So I ran away from the main street into side streets. And in Iraq, like any capital, Arabic capital city, just if you go away from the main street, suddenly it's residential. So I remember there was this old woman. She just walked into her house. She was about to close the door behind her, and she saw me. And she opened the door again. And
oh, wow.
And she asked me to come in. She knew.
She didn't know where you were. Were you where, though?
But it happens.
Okay, so she knew what was happening. Okay.
In Iraq, if you hear an explosion and a man running died, chances are he's not criminal.
Yeah.
It's the other way around.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that.
Yeah.
So she let me in. Really nice old woman. She's cut off the zip tie. Got me some water, offered me food, and I said, no, thank you. And yeah, so I stayed there just to catch my breath. And she gave me some money for the taxi because they took everything from me.
Oh, geez.
So she gave me some money for the taxi back home. And that part I can't remember. Again, it's mostly a lot of parts of the story is blur. I can't remember if I went out and got a cab or she got me a cab. But I remember after a while I was in a cab heading home. Finally. Brilliant. And I'm thinking about it. It's really funny. Oh, gosh. And then people ask me, why do you have this dark sense of humor? That's the my coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And then the car was on a bridge over a highway, just over the bridge. And then there was a convoy of American Humvees coming the other way. And about maybe 100 meters away from them, on exactly top of the bridge, the peak of the bridge. It's a curved, it's an arc bridge. At the peak of the bridge, in front of us, the Americans. And there was an IED, curbside IED, that blew up the first Humvee.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
And there were no cars between us, so the taxi driver immediately hit the brake, and we both just froze. So the taxi driver froze, and my little finger was on the door handle.
Yeah.
Like that, just waiting. waiting for them to start shooting.
Yeah.
So I opened the door handle and jump off the bridge.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, jump off the bridge, you might survive. But if you stay there, get the barrage of bullets from the American, because that was the rules of engagement for the American army at the time in Baghdad. If there was a problem, just shoot everything. And that's what they did most of the time. That's why when they get an IED, most of the casualties come from American bullets.
Oh, wow.
The civilians will die from the American bullets who suffered an IED. They will just shoot everybody. So I've just been into an explosion, got kidnapped, saw myself die.
Yeah.
And now in a cab, back home, and another explosion. And now again, I can see myself. Yeah, this is how I'm going to die. So either a bullet will get me, or I jump off the bridge. Which one will get me?
So, you know, the funny thing is when people say stories like this, they usually add something to the effect of God was watching over me. My time hadn't come yet.
Yeah, you're right. That's funny. Yeah. But even funnier when some theists start to ask you why you lost your faith. What do you do when you face a tough situation?
Yeah.
Who do you pray for?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
you can't say that to an atheist from Iraq or Syria or Yemen or Libya. We've seen that so many times. We shook hands, we sat together, we had tea.
Yeah.
So back to the story.
Do you have one of the questions? Do you have PTSD from all of this?
If I do, it might be buried so deep under all the dark humor. A few years back in a company I used to work for, they had like mental health week, and they hired consultants that will come to the project site and talk to us and have group therapy sessions to talk about feelings and all that kind of mumbo jumbo. And I didn't apply to any of the sessions, so I was doing my job. And then the director suddenly was big American man, ex-football player, came to my tapped my shoulder. What's wrong? Have you signed up to one of the sessions? No. There's one in room 5 now. Okay. So I went there. So what is it about? So they go around the room, talk about they have mental health issues, anxiety, how did they face it? You know how it is. We've seen it in the movies. And then the guy before me, he had not agoraphobia, but something like that. But it was severe anxiety. He couldn't leave the house for 2 years. And this is actually the first job he got after that 2 years. He's getting better. So everybody applaud him. You're brilliant. That's very brave of you to say that. Next, it was me. I said, "Hi, I'm Wissam. I'm a teaholic."
Teaholic?
Yeah. It's like an AA meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Wissam. I'm a teaholic. I've been kidnapped, I've been shot at, I've been imprisoned, but I think I'm doing well. But for some reason, Bill thinks I have to say this to strangers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
And then everybody looked at the other guy. Yeah, so I don't know. I might actually do have PTSD, but it's buried and it will manifest itself horribly sometimes.
As long as you're coping fine and you're able to, I mean, from what I see, I mean, I don't know you very well, but from what I see, you're very active. You're able to speak about it and you're able to laugh about it. You still have a job. You still have a career. I mean, all of these things are signs of someone that's okay. And I do hope that you are okay. I mean, honestly, this is what you said is insane. It's just insane. I don't even have any reference point to what you've been through. It's just unbelievable. So how does this all tie back to the dogma? Why do you blame religion for all of these things? I mean, there's Muslim countries that are not like this, that are not unstable, that are not blowing up and people shooting each other and killing, you know, Shias killing Sunnis. That doesn't happen everywhere, like, does it? Or is Sunnis killing Shias?
Oh, no, I'm not blaming religion for this. Don't get me wrong, no. No, but we all have to admit religion is a very nice tool for people to use.
Yeah.
To fight each other, to spread hatred for no reason whatsoever. So again, back to those apologist left-wing snowflakes. No, we don't do hadith like that. We don't have apostasy laws.
Lakum dinukum waliyadin is a verse in the Quran that says, to you, your religion, to me, mine. That's a Surah Kafir rune, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's basically... Funny. Yeah, go ahead.
It's funny. The title of the surah is Kafirun. And yeah. It says, you have your own religion, I'll have mine. But yeah. You're a kafir. Yeah, so in Egypt, for example, it happened not long ago, I think last year, a man said, I'm a Shiite. He was sheikh of a local mosque, and he converted to Shia. He was dragged in the street, stoned by an angry mob to death.
In Egypt?
In Egypt, not in the 19th century. Happened last year, I think. It was recent.
Jeez. Wow.
Just because he converted to a different sect.
Jeez. Crazy.
So if you move your sect and the mob, well, the mob is not Islam. Don't tell me that. These are Muslims. Well, they don't represent Islam. Who does then? Let whoever represent Islam talk to the mob and tell them, don't kill people because they change sects, let alone leave religion as a whole.
Do they see Shias as non-Muslims? Do they see Shias as non-Muslims?
Well, Sunnis sees Shias as non-Muslims. Shiites sees Sunnis as non-Muslims. Sunni sees Ismaili as non-Muslims. Not sure about how Ismaili sees
Ismailis don't care about these things that much.
Okay. Ahmadi were the cute ones. The Ahmadi.
Do? Because you know I used to be Ismaili, right? I don't know if you know.
Yes, that's why I mentioned.
Ismailis are not concerned with these theological sort of like takfir. They don't care. They don't even talk about heaven and hell, for God's sake. Like, they talk about like going to the mosque and like whatever. Like, it's totally different. It's not even, you can't even compare. It's very, very liberal and modern and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of the 1.5 billion would accuse the different type of not being Muslim. So I have a live stream once. I've done one titled, How Many Muslims Are There in the World? And went through each sect that accuses the other of not being Muslim. And we ended up, I think the actual count was maybe less than 2,000. That's how many Muslims in the world.
That's funny. Yeah.
So back to this. So snowflakeism. On Facebook, if you write a post in Arabic and you say atheists are a danger to society and they should be killed, on Facebook, that post, you would report it as hate speech, as promoting violence, whatever other options there are, nothing will happen to it.
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube as well of some guy and his wife threatening, actually it's more the wife than him, threatening his Sultan, my Pakistani ex-Muslim friend, and saying all the jihadis need to get him and this and that. And like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have reported it and it's not going down because it's an Urdu. So then, but like the opposite, of course. Now, what's happening with your group?
In my group, because it's in Arabic. So guess what? When you report something to Facebook in Arabic, who's going to read it from Facebook?
Nobody. Oh, Muslim.
Mm-hmm. They have their Middle East HQ in United Arab Emirates. So a Muslim from the Arab Gulf area will check if it's. So, and guess what happens? Immediately, you lose all rights to preach, to post, to do anything for a week. Sneeze again, and then it's a month.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
If you, after the month, if I post, hi, and then I've lost my account.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what happened to three of my accounts, my Facebook accounts.
Oh, my God. Jeez, yeah.
So now I've decided not to post anything from my actual account. In my groups, I post from a page account.
It's called
management. So, and on my actual account,
yeah,
I have less than 20 friends.
Okay, that's good.
And all my posts are private. If okay. I post something public, it's in English.
Yeah.
Nobody can get me that way.
I've gone through this game on Facebook as well of being banned and being re-banned and being unbanned. And I got some advice from someone that works at Facebook, and he said basically everything you just said. Don't add anyone as friends you don't personally know. Post all of your stuff, especially your more controversial stuff, from your page's account, not your personal account. And then, by the way, some good news. Ex-Muslims of North America has engaged Facebook from like a civil liberties sort of perspective to stop this from happening. Because what you just said keeps happening over and over again. And the page gets banned, you get banned, you get blocked, you get kicked off. And so they're trying to engage Facebook, the company, to put in some protections for ex-Muslim minorities so that we can post things without getting banned. I don't know what's going to happen and if that's going to lead to any fruit, actually, but there's something happening. They're trying. But this is like they had a governor sign the letter. Like, this has got like real attention. This is not just with the actual company. So mm-hmm. this is why, you know, we have EXMNA, we have this advocacy group, and you know what I'm saying? Like, this is not just me emailing Facebook and no one's going to reply to it. This is like engaging with the teams at Facebook, with the government involvement, to try to add some policies to kind of protect our rights, because otherwise we just keep getting shut down. Right. And that's really bad. Right.
Who forgot her name? Facebook created this kind of board that will police freedom of speech and decide what is permissible, what is not. Uh-huh. And the board allegedly has members from all kind of backgrounds, countries, ethnic minorities. And who represented all Arabs and Muslims? You guys in the chat, if you remember, give me her name. She's a hijabi woman from Yemen, well known to be affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. So they hired someone backed by Turkey, affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Wow.
The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, it's really well known. They are right-wing fundamentalists to the bone. She's affiliated with them, and Facebook chose her to represent Arabs on that board.
Oh, wow. Crazy. Linda Sosu, maybe, or Karaman?
Yeah, that's the one, Karaman.
Okay.
Karaman, yes.
Yeah. So,
Tawakkul Karaman, that's her name, Tawakkul Karaman.
Yeah, it's...
Cheers, Fikri.
So, you know, this is kind of the problem. I was talking to another ex-Muslim guy from Morocco who is in Sweden now, and he said that he has a similar problem where when he's applying for asylum, the lady in charge of immigration is a Muslim hijabi woman. And they put her there because they think they're doing a good job by helping the Muslim minorities who are seeking. But the problem is her bias, of course, right? Like, I don't know what it is personally, but of course, being a, like, if you're a religious Muslim, do you really care about ex-Muslims? Do you really care about LGBT? Do you really care about oppressed minorities, maybe Shias or Ahmadis or whatever?
No, of course not. That's why ex-Muslims, when they do something in Arabic, and we just said it, on Facebook will immediately ban them. Say it in English, nothing will happen. Later, the English-speaking moderator will look at it and they will abide by the rules. But Arab, definitely they're Muslim, and then they are right-wing. Don't tell me about freedom of speech, all that hippie stuff they preach. We love everybody. No, that's fairy tales. They can't stand each other, let alone will stand us. Yeah. And just when because I'm bored, most of lockdown, I open a book and read to people.
Yeah.
Or I open this book and read to people. That's it. It's in English. I read it and translate it live. That's on my channel.
Yeah.
So I'm reading Neil deGrasse Tyson's book about astrophysics. No mention of religion. Let God alone. I'm just talking about science. And then out of the blue, I get a comment. Someone, why don't you repent and come back to Islam? What the? Just focus. I'm talking about science here. So is that how you expect me to believe that you actually going to respect my rights?
Yeah.
Hell no.
Yeah.
You're not gonna do that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
And then after all that, and then those. Oh, by the way, so many come to the Facebook groups, Muslims, and they would say exactly the same stupid thing. What did the Arab atheist bring to the table? What did you produce to humanity?
Yeah. Okay.
Let me say this. We, because of us, there are guys like Adnan Ibrahim. There are people like the guy who said the Al-Buraq is basically has jet farts, and that's how it. So we created this new wave of scholars that started tafsir. They started explaining Quran in a whole new way that goes in line with what the 21st century science, view on morality, and all that. Even they started rejecting all the things that the Prophet said, like Sahih.
Like Aisha's 19 now, apparently, right?
Oh, no, she's 27. No, a Shiite guy said, no, she's 27.
Yeah.
A Shiite. Imagine that. A Shiite.
They like her. Yeah.
They hate her. Yeah. But still, somehow she tend to be 27, because that will, yeah, she's less than that number, that will make the Prophet look bad.
Yes.
So she's 27 now? Okay. Now, why? Okay, about that age thing. Me personally, I don't really have an issue with that. I know that might sound controversial, but here's the thing. It's 2020 now.
Yeah.
Things have moved on. We know with the advancement of science, psychology, all these things, we know that's a bad age.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do it.
Yeah, it's a bigger problem to say that it's okay now than to say that it happened in the past, right? But I guess part of the claim is that being the perfect moral example, he shouldn't have engaged in, you know, something that could have been seen as problematic later on, right? But yeah, for a normal man of his time, he was just doing what everybody else did, right?
But yeah, compare him to other prophets and messengers in the biblical records. He didn't do as bad as some of them. Mm-hmm. He didn't have sex with his two daughters after he got drunk.
Well, that was, according to the Bible, they blamed the daughters. The daughters got him drunk, Lot, right?
So he's couldn't raise his daughters. He didn't raise his. He's a prophet, and he didn't raise his daughters well enough.
Well, Lot is not considered to be like a prophet in the same way in the Bible, like he is in Islam. Islam is, you know, infallible man and prophet, whatever. But yeah, it's different. You're right. There's a lot of terrible things in the Bible too that happen. But Islam actually allows child marriage because of Muhammad's marriage. Where the problem is, right?
Because a thing called Sunnah. That's the thing. Sunnah is everything that the Prophet said or did.
Yes.
And if you follow Sunnah, you're a good Muslim.
Yeah.
So right now in the 21st century, if we think 9 is bad, you can't marry a girl at 9 years old. But it's Sunnah. What do you do?
Yeah.
So we get back to the dissonance thing. And now she's not 9, she's 27. And, look at that thing, Elvin.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
So whoever comes in and say, well, they have their time. And I said, okay, so all Sunnah is down now. We don't need to do it because Sunnah wasn't that time and they have their time and you're in different times now. And I don't need to worry about going to the toilet with my left foot or eat with my left hand because it wasn't that time, not now, because these were Sunnah.
Yeah.
All right? Yeah. Sorry, so, rant is over.
So I'm collecting questions for you, but before we get to the questions from other people, I'm still going to ask you questions for myself. So what is the role of science in all of this in getting people out of Islam? Do you think science has a big role to play? Do you think talking about Muhammad's actions, like what do you think is the biggest way to help people? Like you're doing a lot of work here. You have a Facebook group, you have a Twitter, obviously. You have your channel where you're reading science books in Arabic. What do you know about Faisal Saeed Al-Muttar and he's doing this translation project. I forget what it's called, Books Without Borders or something. Do you know about him?
No, I have to look him up.
Okay, yeah, it's called Ideas Beyond Borders. So he has this project where they're translating a bunch of Wikipedia articles into Arabic. And a bunch of books like Sam Harris's book, Dawkins' book, they've allowed the books to be translated and published for free or something like that. So this is what he's doing. What do you think is the best, most important, most effective way? And how can people support you and your work to help people in the Middle East? Because I think that's where the battle really needs to be. Okay,
yes.
Canada, US, Australia, whatever, Japan, UK, you know, we're doing fine. We have a lot of English speaking atheists and all that, but in the Middle East, in Arabic, there's a real battle, right?
I think, yeah, the translation is good. Science is good. It's good to people that believe in science. You wouldn't believe how many flat earthers we have in my group.
Muslims, of course,
yes.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Muslims.
Yeah.
In 2020, we still have flat earthers, being Muslims or Christians. They had their annual meeting in Birmingham last year,
mm-hmm.
here in the UK.
Wow.
So, but again, so it's not linked to specific religion. That's my point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are so many of them in my group, flat earthers.
Why is that? I think you'd probably find more in Arabic speaking flat earther Muslims than English speakers. Why do you think that is?
No, I disagree.
No?
There's a tweet from Neil deGrasse Tyson. He said, the flat earthers rumor is true. They are all around the globe.
So what's causing them to be flat earthers, and what's the connection to the religion?
To Muslims, it's clear. It's in the Quran. The Quran said we made earth flat. Of course.
Well, we spread it out like a bed. It doesn't say we made earth flat, right?
Well, that's the counter argument. Those who believe in science,
yeah,
and actually were on a plane once and traveled, and
yeah,
they know it's round.
Yeah.
So they would say, no, he means no, it's flat for your eye, as the eye can see, or we made it spread like a bed. That
yeah.
doesn't
yeah, yeah,
mean
yeah,
earth
yeah.
is flat. But for the other ones, that these are ultra right wing. They would go, no, it's the literal meaning. It said, I made it flat. That
yeah.
means it's flat. NASA is a lie. It's all Hollywood.
Yeah.
No moon. Nobody flew to the moon. So those people, there's no hope. It's a lost cause.
Mm-hmm.
Just move on.
Yeah.
Don't talk to them. I tried.
Yeah. The flat earthers epistemology is so broken that it's so difficult to get into to actually get on the same, you know, playing field with them, because they don't trust authority at all. They will only trust something that... There's an amazing documentary. I personally loved it. It's called Beyond the Curve on Netflix. It's about flat earthers. And it's amazing how they self-cannibalize themselves. They even suspect other flat earthers of being in conspiracies. It's hilarious. It's so funny that... And then they were like asking, you know, they were interviewing them and asking them questions like, okay, what do you believe then? You don't believe in the news? No. I only believe what I see myself. And then there was an example of a guy that he made a homemade rocket. This wasn't in the documentary. But he died trying to fly.
He died, yeah.
It was a couple of months ago,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So if your epistemology, your source of truth doesn't include any sort of authority, any sort of anybody, like you, if you can't believe anybody, then of course you're going to believe the most craziest things, right? It's just, and by the way, again, you have to see the documentary, because at the end of the documentary,
that's it, I've added it to my list.
They debunk themselves. It's just so funny to watch them. And then they had to like find a way to resolve the fact that they just disproved themselves. It's just lovely. Now, of course, they're not coming. A lot of them are Christians, okay? Not all of them, but a lot of them were Christians. because that also kind of ties in with the world, religious worldview. And, you know, to me, I personally think conspiracy thinking and religion go well together. Because it's much easier way out of the problem. So, for example, I once met a guy, and he's like, I want to meet you. This is when I was first leaving Islam. And he's like, I want to meet you. I want to talk about this, right? And I'm thinking, yay, this guy, he probably left Islam or wants to leave Islam, and he wants advice from me. I met the guy in Starbucks, and the guy was telling me about hollow earth theory. And I was like, why am I here? Like, I should have known better. I shouldn't have wasted my time. And like, why am I talking to you? Like, you're just like, hollow earth. You think the earth is hollow and Gog and Magog is inside the earth. And he's like, how do you know it's not? And I'm like, this is not science, man. This is just like nonsense. Like, but it fits well, because where else is Yajuj and Majuj? I mean, there's tons of them hiding somewhere. I mean, how do you reconcile those two things, right? And so when you have conspiracy thinking, it tends to go well with religion, because if you don't care about evidence, then religion fits well in there, because you don't need evidence for that, right? Like, it's just
But back to the original question, what do we do?
So yes.
Those who can accept a question, flat earthers know that they are they're gone, lost cause. But those are minority.
Yeah.
Majority can accept a question. They'll refuse to answer, they'll refuse your answer, but they will let you ask a question. And when you bring up things like Yajuj and Majuj, they will start making up shit.
Yeah.
They have no excuse. Yeah. And that's the first crack in that armor. To the point where if they get to the point, I will consider it a win. If they get to the point where they say, yeah, it's not literally that's what he said, that's when suddenly beating women will not mean beating women.
Yeah,
you wouldn't believe how many nowadays says beat them doesn't mean beat them. Have you heard that before?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah,
linguistic acrobats is amazing. So beating is not beating. Cutting their head off doesn't mean cutting their head off. Oh, good. Now you are in that perfect zone. Brilliant. Go forth and multiply.
Yeah.
That's a good Muslim to my mind. Brilliant. If you see me in the street, chances you will cut off my head are slim. So brilliant. I like you now.
Yeah.
That's when they are. So that's my achievement. That's the achievement of all atheists who are on the social media doing all these things. That's our achievement. That's what we've done. Numbers of those people who beat them doesn't mean beat them.
Yeah.
They're huge now. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
We are on the right track. We just need to keep doing what we're doing.
Absolutely. How popular is atheism in Iraq underground, or even like openly?
No, it used to be open in the 80s. It was normal. If you know someone who's an atheist, it was normal. Because for some reason, it was linked to...
Communism.
So 70s, 80s, it was okay. As long as you don't say you're a communist, just say I'm an atheist, it's fine. So it's okay. But then in the 90s, Saddam started using, the brilliant tool, religion. So I started using that. So that's when, you can't say I'm an atheist in the 90s. But now it's really bad, to the point where, you know, in Baghdad they had demonstrations against the government for months now. More than 800 killed, 25,000 injured. So one of the big things that they started, the government actually, they started accusing the demonstrators of being pro-LGBT and being atheists. So just so the society will stop supporting them, will lose the public support. So they're accusing them of being atheists and support LGBT rights.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's not only frowned upon. It's bad. You can't say I'm an atheist. You can't openly say I'm an atheist.
So you can't say you're an atheist. You can't say you're gay. What you can't say probably that you believe
it depends, because and again when it comes to LGBT. Again, I had a live stream about this a few weeks ago. It was Together in Solidarity for Vegetarianism, which was a reference to LGBT.
Oh, okay.
So if I decide not to eat meat, will that change your view about me? No. So if I decide not to have an intercourse with a different gender, I will have it with my own gender. Why will that make you think of me differently? It's yeah. exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So again, it's the hypocrisy is on so many levels when it comes to this subject. I know it for a fact in Iraq, Jordan, Syria, around these areas. So if you're gay, but you are, I don't know what it's called. Let's call them positive and negative. If you're a gay man, but you're the positive, you're okay.
Oh, top and bottom, basically.
Yeah. Top and, yeah. If you're the top one, yeah. you're okay. That's yeah. very manly.
Yeah.
If you're the bottom one,
yeah.
no, stone him to death.
Wow.
People will know that man is gay.
Oh, yeah.
But he's top.
If you're an effeminate gay.
Fine. Yeah, nobody will.
No,
maybe don't let kids near him. that's the only thing that the society, the whole neighborhood will do. They don't get children near him.
Yeah.
But he's a good man.
Yeah. Wow.
But if you're a bit effeminate.
Yeah.
Oh no! Stoned to death. Literally stoned to death. That happened in Iraq so many times.
Yeah. Thrown off the buildings. Or thrown off the buildings.
No, that's ISIS. No, ISIS do that. No, the militias. No, they just drag them in the street, big blocks, and hit bash them on
Jeez.
The
head. Wow.
It's on the social media. It's everywhere.
Oh wow! Wow. So was the Saddam Hussein regime like secular or pro women? Someone's asking.
Well, he was pro anybody that was pro Saddam.
Okay. Yeah.
No, the man was just. He didn't discriminate.
Yeah.
If you're with me, you're with me. If you're against me, you're going down.
Yeah.
So man, woman, Muslim, Christian, atheist, he doesn't care as long as you're okay with Saddam.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then he started using religion in the 90s. Things started to change slightly after that.
So what change have you seen yourself online? You've already mentioned that you've seen a lot of changes in the Muslim community in terms of like kind of apologetics, making excuses for things. What's the battle we need to fight now? Like, what do we need to do?
The likes of I don't know about the English speaking ones. All I know is what's his face, the guy who was with Cosmic Skeptic. What's his face?
Oh, Muhammad Hijab.
Hijab.
Yeah.
Yeah. The likes of Hijab.
Yeah.
Openly threatening someone online, and nobody bats an eyelid.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah,
I've noticed a lot of people commenting on YouTube and Facebook about your video and thought, no, I can't see the threat. Well, obviously, you didn't live where I lived.
Yeah,
I can see the threat a mile away.
Yeah,
and that was a threat, a very clear one.
Yeah.
On the Arab side, we have people like, again, Arab-speaking commenters. We have Haytham Talat, we have Qunaibi, wow. Qunaibi, he must get funded from Saudi Arabia. He's allegedly a doctor. Maybe he is, I don't know. But a very good, well-edited, production value is really high on his videos.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking about all Ramadan comes, all the benefits of Siyam.
Yeah.
And then, it was fasting. So Ramadan fasting is good. Stop drinking water for 18 hours a day. It's fine.
Yeah.
First day of Eid, no, you have to drink plenty of water.
Yeah.
And then he will actually pick and choose. Of suddenly, evolution is bad. It's not real. Vaccines are made of pig blood. Don't take them. Whoa! That got out of hand very quickly. Hold on.
Yeah.
stick to dawah stuff. Don't.
Yeah, I know. Eh?
How can a doctor think like that? Yeah. And they have hundreds of thousands of followers. Debunking them is really important.
Oh yeah.
And there's a very long list. Others who are reinterpreting the Quran, I hate their guts. Again, I mentioned him, Adnan Ibrahim, Zakir Naik. No, Zakir Naik is, he's a joke. Don't get Zakir Naik in. I don't even bother with Zakir Naik.
Yeah, what's the situation with Muslims and Christians in these countries? Like, what's the relationship? What's the dynamics, whether in Iraq,
again,
Egypt?
An example from Egypt, very recent. I've read the post today. A priest, I think all he did was he threw holy water in the Nile.
Okay.
I think, yeah. So after Sunday, holy water and all that. Yeah. And then he threw it in the Nile. Mm-hmm. He just threw the glass in the Nile. There was a public outcry. He doesn't own the Nile. There are other humans who use it. He didn't piss in it.
Yeah.
So you can, yeah. That's how it is now with Christians in Egypt. In Iraq, I grew up with my mom's best friend was Christian.
Oh, yeah.
In high school, a couple of my friends were Christians. But I knew there might be tension somewhere. I didn't see any of it until one day it was summer holiday. And after the summer holiday, we had a thing when you had to go in the middle of summer holiday, you had to go back to school and give all your books and then get the new books of the new year. So we haven't seen any of friends for ages. And there was this Christian guy I knew. He wasn't one of my friends, not the other two. So, how you doing, mate? Give me a hug. And then he went away, and another guy was standing next to him. Why did you hug him? Didn't you know he's Christian? They are najis.
Wow, najis means filthy, right? Yeah, dirty, yeah.
Yeah, so unholy, dirty. He's najis. What? And then I called him again in front of this other kid, the Christian. I called him again. I said, give me another hug. Just despite him. He wasn't even a friend. I just knew him. He knew me. I said, hey, buddy, quick hug and went away. He's not just, okay, now give me a proper hug. Just despite him. So there were tensions before, but it wasn't so out. After 2003, lawlessness. Oh, no, so many of them were pushed to leave Iraq. So many of them were kidnapped for ransom.
Oh,
so slowly but surely, vast majority of them, they sold everything and migrated either legally or illegally.
Oh yeah,
some of them ended up in Canada, Sweden, States.
I mean, I almost don't even need to ask you this, but like, does Islam contribute to bad treatment of Ahlul Kitab, people of the book? I mean, you have religious people saying Ahlul Kitab is an honorable term for the people of the book. Do you feel like this is, does Islam contribute to the bad treatment of Middle Eastern Christians and Jews? That's like, I don't even, like, let's not even talk about Jews. I mean, that's even worse than Christians, but yeah, go ahead.
What does An Yadwahum Sagirun mean?
Yeah, so jizya. Yeah, so talk about that. What is that? What is jizya?
So Quran says, if you're a Muslim, you pay zakat. That's your tax. If you're from Ahl al-Kitab, Christian, Jewish, you don't pay zakat, you pay jizya. So basically, it's protection money. Mm-hmm. So like thugs, they're taking protection money from them. I'll protect you. Give me money.
Yep.
Don't only give me the money. Give me your money. And your eyes down, being humiliated.
Yeah.
That's what it means. An yadwahum sadirun. As in, you give me the money and your head down, you're being humiliated.
It's hard to get out of that because it clearly says, while they are humiliated, humbled, however you want to put it, they're put down basically. So it's not like it's supposed to be a humiliating thing to them. Then it's a very heavy burden, right? The tax.
Humbled. They said humbled. Okay, I have a series of streams called Quran in layman terms, mm-hmm. just to debunk all this BS. This translation is pure lies. Sagirun is not humbled. Mutawadi'un is humbled. Sagirun is not humbled. Sagirun is humiliated. That's, you see, I'm pretty laid back. I like to be funny. I don't take anything seriously. People have seen my picture on the first frame. I did that for fun. I've done 7 of them and put it in the group. And I said, okay, caption these. I have done many faces.
Yeah.
But what really gets on my nerves is pure lies like this. They change the actual meaning of the word. Just because, so they make it look nice for non-Arabic speaking new Muslims or potential new Muslims. That is lie. How can you do that with a straight face? And you call yourself good Muslim because you're lying. Mm-hmm. I have one of the gazillion groups we have. We have one just for atheists. No Muslim, Christians, Buddhists allowed. Just atheists. Small one, few thousand members.
A few thousand small, okay.
No, it's small compared to the main one, which is 25,000.
Wow, jeez.
So, before you enter, there's a question. And the question is, do you follow religion? Yes or no? If yes, tell me which one is it. And if they say no, they in. If they say yes, they're out. If they say Islam, they're out. You, at least twice a day, I find someone posting profanities in the group. You atheist sons of dogs and blah, blah, blah. Oh, so you lied and said you're not a Muslim. Just so you can go to a small group compared to the big one.
Yeah.
Just scream profanities.
Yeah.
And then get kicked out. How easy is it for someone to say, I'm not a Muslim? You just left Islam, mate. You were Kafir for a couple hours until we caught you and kicked you out. Was it that easy?
Yeah.
So back again, treating Christians and Jews. So that's what Quran says. Pages here, while being humiliated, I am better than you.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that, believing in this, and they read this surah, while they pray in tears, so that's how beautiful Islam is. And then they post something about what's happening, the horrible tragedy of the result of racism in America.
Oh, George. Yeah, you have.
And they post about that. Yeah. And then look how racist Americans are. You Arab atheists don't criticize Americans.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. You're the racist one.
Yeah.
Just by converting to Islam, you're better than anybody else. That's racism.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sort of religious superiority, even if you don't call it racism, because it's not race-based, but it's definitely replaced. I feel like Islam. Okay. Maybe this is a good question to ask you, because I sometimes hear this. What do you think about actual racism in Islam? Does Islam eliminate racism? Because, the Quran says, I mean, not Quran. So, you know, there was Bilal, it was put on top of Adan, and, you know, Muhammad tried to marry Zayd and Zainab, who Zayd was an ex-slave. Zainab was an honorable, lady or whatever. So Islam actually says there's no superiority of an Arab to a non-Arab. But there's also some hadith apparently that say that the Arabs are the best, and and Allah chose the best of them to be Muhammad and this and that. What do you say about Islam and racism?
I think that Arabs are the best and Muhammad is the best of Arabs. I don't think that's hadith is sahih.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but I'll double check. Mm-hmm. But back to it's not okay. Discrimination. Let's call it discrimination, not racism. Mm-hmm. They discriminate. A slave is a slave. A slave is less than a free man. A slave woman is less than a free woman.
Yeah,
that's Islam. Hijab in Islam, originally how it started is so people can tell the free woman from the slave when they sexually harass them, when they go out to the toilet. So that's how it started. It got to the point where Omar recognized the big one, one of the prophet's wives.
Oh, yeah, Sauda.
Sauda.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he recognized her in the dark because she was big.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, Sauda, now we recognized you. And that's when, okay, from now on, we're hijab.
Yeah.
So when we actually harass women when they go to the toilet, if she's wearing hijab, we won't, because she's free, not because she's pious.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's free, she's not a slave. Slave girls are free for all. So, no, in Islam, yes, they discriminate. And especially, so the first discrimination is if you're a Muslim or not. That's the first discrimination. And then if you're a Muslim, are you a free man or free woman or not?
Yeah.
That's discrimination. If you're free, you're at higher level than slaves.
Yeah.
Even Abdu bil Abd wal Hur bil Hur. Am I right? So a free man for a free man, a slave for a slave. So yeah. If a free man kills
the
a free man.
The boss, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. The Islamic version is a slave for a slave.
Yeah.
If you kill my slave, I have to kill your slave. What's his slave's fault? He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He lived all his life a slave. Now he'll kill him because someone kills someone else. It's not a chicken.
It's yeah. It's very medieval. It's very
exactly. Medieval. But of course, now there's no slavery, so that doesn't count. As if Islam ended slavery. Islam ended alcohol just like that. Well, it's not just like that. It took a few tries first.
Yeah.
Did it light up the first time. He went first. Did it work?
Yeah.
No, don't pray and drunk. That didn't work. Hold on. Yeah. You're too bad if you're drunk. And then finally, no, it's haram. It worked the third time as a charm.
Yeah.
So alcohol gone. Slavery? No, well, no, because it was there the first time, and it was part of the economy, and he worked on drying up the sources of slavery, so, yeah, and then gradually it was banned. By whom? Well, no, when you dry up the sources, oh my gosh. And then we have to wait until the 60s when the UN puts lots of pressure on Saudi Arabia to close the last slave market in Saudi Arabia just next door to Mecca.
Yeah, and that's why I think human rights and are not going to come from religious teachings, whether Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Hinduism. I mean, they will have little things in there which are good, but overall we can do better. We don't need to hold on to these anchors, because that's what they are, the anchors. Hmm. Possibly, I don't know, maybe some things in Islam are actually good for women at that time, although it doesn't seem to be the case, because even the women at the time of Muhammad complained that how come the Quran's always about men? Why is the verses always coming for men? And then the verse came in the Quran for the believing woman, you know, she has the same as the believing man, and you know, whatever. Right?
Sorry, Beach Price made a good point. Slavery helped the slaves, one of my favorite excuses.
Yeah.
Actually, a new scholar from, he's young, muscly, handsome, from Azhar.
Oh, okay.
From Azhar University. With a straight face, in an interview on Deutsche Welle channel, when he was asked about sex slaves in Islam, and he said, well, she's a prisoner of war, and she has needs. She's a woman, she has needs. He said that on a straight face, with a straight face, on a Deutsche Welle, on an international channel, the German channel, he said, well, she's a woman, and she has needs. And since then, his name was changed on social media. Needs in Arabic is ihtiyajat, and his name is Abdullah Rushdie. His name became Abdullah Ihtiyajat. Abdullah Needs. That's that's the new name we call him now. Abdullah Needs. He's so funny.
Oh man.
With a straight face, he said that. He was actually convinced.
Yeah.
They were doing her a favor.
Jeez.
When she's a sex slave.
Even though like many of these women that were taken as slaves were actually married, they had husbands before they became slaves.
And the morality at the time, yes, you can, if in a war, you'll take their women as your slaves.
Yeah.
But before Islam, if they were married, you can't have sex with them. that's immoral. That's how people behaved at the time. Mm-hmm. But when they got a new bunch of new slaves, of people, of tribes they actually knew, and they literally knew their husbands, and they couldn't do anything with them because they were married, they went back to the prophet and they said, well, here's the thing. We came with you for women. Now we have the women, but they're all married. What do we do now? And then suddenly a new verse came down from heaven. Yes, you can have sex with sex slaves, even if they were married. It's fine.
Yeah.
That's how peaceful Islam is.
It's insane. Yeah, it's literally wild. Even if there is no more slavery today, the fact that all of this was allowed and justified and enabled by Muhammad, and he was also involved in slave trading. He had his own slaves. He even slept with the slave women. It's just insane that this could be held up as a moral example.
It actually, one of Surat al-Tahrim. The story behind Surat al-Tahrim, do you know the story?
About the why do you make haram on you? What, like the honey or the Maria, the cop?
It's the Maria version, not the honey one. Yeah. The honey one. It's, the honey one is it's the Maria one. So she's a slave.
Yeah.
And he got caught having sex with her. So that's the thing. So the prophet, the last messenger of God, the creator of this universe, this 14 billion year old universe, 97 billion light years wide. So this universe, the last prophet of the creator of this universe was having sex with his sex slave and got caught by one of his wives. And he said, don't tell anybody. I will swear to you, I'm not going to have sex with slaves anymore. Not this one, all of them. Just don't tell anybody. And guess what? After I die, your dad will be after me. And your friend's dad will be after him. Caliphs. Who was he talking to? The daughter of Omar. So he just promised her father and Aisha's father all the kingdom after he dies, just to keep her mouth shut when she caught him having sex with a sex slave. And what did she do? She told her friend. And what did her friend do? She told her friend, the other wives. Got to him. And that's when suddenly the creator of the 14 billion year old universe sent him a new surah that says, yeah, you can do whatever you want from now on. You can marry whatever. You can divorce all your women.
Why do you agree to make haram something that's halal for you, basically, right?
Yeah, but basically the whole surah, if you read it, it was just, God was talking. Listen, don't listen to them. If you want, you can divorce them. I get you, that God talking to Muhammad. I will get you better than them. Virgins, married, widows, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Even better. That was God talking.
I don't remember that part of the story where he promised. I don't know. It doesn't say that, right? That he promised.
Not in the tafsir itself. You have to go back and read the hadith.
About promising that your father will be the next.
Yes.
But then don't Sunnis must use that to prove that Abu Bakr would have been the next caliph, right? And then Umar and then Uthman and whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because I thought it wasn't clear who was supposed to be the leader after he died, because he never really said that, right?
Well, because after that, Al-Saqifah happened. And Al-Saqifah, when he lifted Ali's hand and told his armpit at the end, then he said, he is to follow me.
Hmm.
And Saqifah happened after this incident.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with that story. It must be a Shia story.
Exactly, yeah, it is. It is a Shia story. In the Sunni description of it, the Prophet lifted his hands.
Yeah.
And he said, follow me and follow my
people. Yeah.
So, but he was holding someone else's hand and he said, follow me and follow my people, referencing to his son-in-law.
So I've kept you for a long time, and we went through most of the questions as well. Let me just double check. Thank you, Wissam. This was really an amazing conversation. What kind of final things do you want to share? So you have a YouTube channel, you have your Facebook groups, There's your Twitter. What would you like to share anything else of yours that you want people to check out?
No, I don't have anything to plug. People now have the permission. They can join my channel, subscribe, and wait for the English videos. I'm hoping the next one will be with you.
Yeah.
In layman terms.
Let's do that.
And keep up doing what you're doing. Even if you just show up to these videos and comment to our videos, to Muslims' videos, if you see something wrong, criticize it. I said something wrong earlier, people criticize me, and I apologize. But if you do it with Muslims a lot, hopefully they will change behavior, they will change translations, they will start accepting change. The more you hit around that point, the more chances are things will improve.
Indeed. I mean, that's an excellent way to put it. Not everyone can be an activist. Not everyone can come online and talk about these things and do these things. But yeah, just joining the channel, I mean, joining the chats and being there, watching the videos, that's like a vote of confidence. As well, please subscribe to my channel as well as Wissam's, especially if you're an Arabic speaker, then join Wissam's channel. He has a lot of Arabic content, some English content, hopefully more to come. As well, I just want to say thank you. I think you're doing a really wonderful job, and I feel like your battle and, you know, the Pakistani ex-Muslims, this is where the real battle is. And this is where we need to focus our efforts, and this is what we need to support. And this is where the biggest change is going to come in the world, you know, in the places where, not in the West, where we already have freedom of speech mostly and freedom of religion, freedom of expression, but in the Middle East, in Pakistan, and in these countries where you're not free to leave your religion, where you are attacked for being, you know, gay or LGBT in any way. And thank you everyone for watching. Please consider as well joining the channel for as little as $2 a month. You can pledge your allegiance to the secular caliphate of Abdullah Samir. Just kidding. But yeah, $2 minimum to join the channel, to get a little icon next to your name. And you're also giving YouTube a little bit more incentive to keep my channel online, because there's always a risk that my channel will go. I hope not. I try to be fair. I try to be, you know, not biased, not bigoted. But you know how it is, right? Like, when you're doing this work, it just gets...
Mate, now you've hosted two Arabs. So the risk is high now.
And there's a third one coming, right? So, yeah, they come, and when you get to a certain point, it becomes inevitable that you get, like, mass flagged, and then YouTube... sometimes you just get taken down. So anyways, yeah, this is one way to kind of show YouTube that, hey, this channel is making some money, so keep it up. Just don't lose it. Don't bite the hand that feeds you, so to speak, right? Like, they get a cut, of course, from this whole thing. And yeah, and I'm getting close to 50,000 subscribers. So please do, if you're new here, please, I want to get there. I'm excited. This is the next milestone, right? Again,
yeah, it's big.
Yeah, thank you, Wissam. This was amazing. And hope to see you on your channel next.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, everyone. Take care. Bye.